Hi everyone, welcome back to the OrthoBullets podcast. In today's episode, we covered the topic of tibial stress syndrome, or shin splints, found under the knee and sports section at orthobullets.com. Let's begin with a quick summary. Tibial stress syndrome, also known as shin splints, is an overuse injury or repetitive load injury of the shin area that leads to persistent dull anterior leg pain. Diagnosis is made clinically with tenderness along the posteromedial distal tibia, made worse with plantar flexion. Radiographs or bone scans may be obtained to rule out stress fractures. Treatment is generally non-operative with NSAIDs, rest, and activity modifications. Now let's get into the episode. In terms of the epidemiology, remember that this makes up 10 to 15% of running injuries and is involved in 60% of leg pain syndromes. In terms of the anatomic location, this most commonly presents as medial or posteromedial tibial stress syndrome, but it may also present as anterior or anterolateral tibial stress syndrome, and it may also present in the distal and posteromedial tibia. Risk factors include runners without enough shock absorption, such as running on cement or uneven surfaces, or wearing improper running shoes, training errors, such as sudden increases in training intensity and duration, running more than 20 miles per week, hill training early in the season, a history of previous lower extremity injury, and overpronation or increased internal tibial rotation. In terms of the pathophysiology, this is typically caused by traction periostitis. In an anterolateral case, there's a traction periostitis of the tibialis anterior on the tibia and the interosseous membrane. In a posteromedial case, there's a traction periostitis of the tibialis posterior and soleus. Conditions that are associated include female athlete triad. Remember that this is critical to diagnose and treat. Another associated condition is a tibial stress fracture. Remember that females have a 1.5 to 3.5 increased risk of progression to stress fractures. Moving on to the presentation. Symptoms may include a vague, diffuse pain along the middle distal tibia that decreases with running in the early stage, and this should be differentiated from exertional compartment syndrome, for which pain increases with running. There may also be earlier onset of pain with more frequent training in the later stages. On exam, one may note tenderness along the posteromedial border of the tibia, which begins 4 cm proximal to the medial malleolus and extends proximally up to 12 cm. One may also note pes planus, a tight Achilles tendon, weak core muscles, and a provocative test is pain on resisted plantar flexion. In terms of imaging, radiographs are indicated to exclude stress fractures. Remember that conventional radiographs are normal in the first 2 to 3 weeks. And long-term changes may include periosteal exostoses. Remember that this helps to differentiate from stress fractures, which demonstrate a quote-unquote dreaded black line. One may also perform a three-phase bone scan. This is also indicated to exclude stress fractures. Specific findings include a diffuse longitudinal increased uptake along the posteromedial border of the tibia in the delayed phase, which is phase 3. There may be normal findings on phase 1, which is the flow phase, and the blood pull phase, which is phase 2. This will help to differentiate from stress fracture, which has focal intense hyperperfusion and hyperemia in phase 1 and 2, and focal fusiform uptake in phase 3. An MRI is indicated to identify other soft tissue injuries. Specific findings include periosteal edema and progressive marrow involvement. Now let's discuss the differential diagnosis for exertional leg pain. Anterior tibial stress syndrome originates in the periosteum, and it is characterized by vague, diffuse pain along the anterolateral tibia, worse at the beginning of exercise, that decreases during training. Medial tibial stress syndrome also originates in the periosteum and is characterized by vague, diffuse pain along the middle distal tibia, worse at the beginning of exercise, that also decreases during training. A tibial or fibular stress fracture originates in the bone, and it is characterized by pain with running, point tenderness over the fracture site, and a quote-unquote dreaded black line on lateral x-ray. Exertional compartment syndrome originates in the muscle and fascia. It is characterized by symptoms that begin 10 minutes into exercise and resolve 30 minutes after exercise. There may be sensory or motor loss and elevated anterior compartment pressures. Leg tendinopathy originates in the tendon, and it may involve the Achilles tendon, peroneal tendons, or the tibialis posterior tendon. A sural or superficial peroneal nerve entrapment originates in the nerve, and it is characterized by dermatomal distribution of symptoms. Lumbar radiculopathy also originates in the nerve, and it is characterized as being worse with lumbar tension positioning, such as with sitting. And a popliteal artery entrapment originates in the blood vessel, and it is diagnosed with vascular studies. Now let's discuss treatment. Non-operative options include activity modification with non-operative modalities. This is indicated as first line of treatment, and it is successful in the vast majority of cases. Specific techniques include activity modification, such as decreasing running distance, frequency, and intensity by 50%, using low-impact and cross-training exercises during rehab period, regular stretching and strengthening, running on a synthetic track, and avoiding running on hills, on uneven or hard surfaces. Shoe modifications include changing running shoes every 250 to 500 miles, as shoes lose shock-absorbing capacity at this distance. Orthotics may also be helpful in patients with pes planus. Therapy should focus on strengthening of inverters and everters of the calf. And other techniques include local phonophoresis with corticosteroids, which may be effective. Operative options include deep posterior compartment fasciotomy and release of painful portion of the periosteum. This is indicated if there is failed non-operative treatment. In terms of the outcomes, there are variable results, and it is not likely to cause complete resolution of symptoms. And lastly, complications to keep in mind include a recurrence. Remember that this is common after resumption of heavy activity. Now that we've discussed the major points relating to tibial stress syndrome, let's walk through a question to apply what we've learned and get a sense of how the topic might be tested. For this question, consider the following clinical scenario. Which of the following findings helps to distinguish between stress fractures of the tibia and shin splints? And the answer choices are: Choice 1. With shin splints, a bone scan shows the posterior tibial cortex in a diffuse longitudinal orientation. Choice 2. With tibial shin splints, the bone scan is more intense. Choice 3. A more diffuse area of tenderness is seen in tibial stress fractures. Choice 4. A three-phase bone scan is positive in all phases with shin splints, but only positive in delayed imaging with tibial stress fractures. Or choice 5. After activity, pain persists longer with tibial stress fractures. The best answer to this question is choice 1. With shin splints, a bone scan shows the posterior tibial cortex in a diffuse longitudinal orientation. Anterior tibial pain can often be difficult to diagnose. A bone scan showing the tibial cortex in a diffuse longitudinal orientation is consistent with shin splints compared to a more discrete, localized uptake more commonly seen with a stress fracture. Bone stress injuries are due to cyclical overuse of the bone. They are relatively common in athletes and military recruits, but are also seen in otherwise healthy people who have recently started new or intensive physical activity. Diagnosis of bone stress injuries is based on the patient's history of increased physical activity and on imaging findings. The general symptom of a bone stress injury is stress-related pain. Bone stress injuries are difficult to diagnose based on only a clinical exam because the clinical symptoms may vary depending on the phase of the pathophysiological spectrum in the bone stress injury. Imaging studies are needed to ensure an early and exact diagnosis. If the diagnosis is made early, most bone stress injuries heal well without complications. That's all for this review about tibial stress syndrome or shin splints. We hope that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session from OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. As a reminder, you can follow along with these podcast episodes by reviewing the topics directly on orthobullets.com. You can listen to these episodes on the OrthoBullets website or phone app while reading through the topic. If the OrthoBullets podcast has been valuable to you, we'd be thrilled if you consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you all tomorrow, right here, on the OrthoBullets podcast.